This podcast is made possible by thousands of dedicated listeners just like you. Be a part of this powerful three-decade legacy of evangelization by visiting materdeiradio.com or downloading the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for joining us on the bridge between your faith and everyday life.
Bringing you a common sense and fresh perspective to creating a just society. This is Common Sense on Social Justice. You'll get equipped with the tools you need to carry out social justice right where you are. Now, here's the host of Common Sense on Social Justice, Michael Davis.
Thank you so much for joining us again today. I am glad that you are here with us as we continue our lengthy journey through Quadragesimo Anno, the encyclical of Pope Pius XI. And we're in part seven today, and we're kind of in a two-part mini-series. We're in part two today, the reform of institutions and morality. And we talked last time about the reform of institutions. Today, we're talking about moral reform in humans. We'll be covering paragraphs 97 through 110 today. I live in the Pacific Northwest, and the trees here are huge. And when they fall, it is impressive to see the root system of these trees. I do a lot of hiking, and when I see these fallen Douglas fir trees, they're hundreds of years old, and just the massive root systems that you see uprooted because of storms, decay, whatever may be the case. But the root system is so important to life and stability for these trees, and so it is with us. In order for a society to function well and justly, it must have a strong and deep root system. So often, though, we do not even concern ourselves with the roots, but just focus on the branches, thus getting ourselves in trouble. But today we're looking how to develop a deeper root system and deeper morals as individuals and as a society. In paragraphs 97 through 99, the Pope brings out some important ideas for us. He says, what we have taught about the reconstruction and perfection of social order can surely in no wise be brought to realization without the reform of morality, the very record of history clearly shows. So he says, you know, look, we can try to reform things in society all we want. We can try to have better social programs. We can try to have better laws around race relations. We can have better homeless programs. We can reform Congress, whatever. But he says all of it's for nothing if we don't see moral reform. And he says history shows this. You have to have a good morality in society in order for anything to work out. And so he says there once was a society that had the ideals and it had these morals in it that was good and right and holy. However, as time went along, that society failed to change with the changing of time. So what he's promoting then is a moral society that is flexible enough to be able to continue its morality amongst the changes that just happen over time in human societies. So, for example, say we have a certain set of morals as a society. Now we've got computers and all this technology. Those morals must still guide us as a society. There's been this big discussion, right, about artificial intelligence, AI. And I remember hearing Elon Musk in an interview saying that, you know, that we need to slow down with AI and get our wits about us, get our moral guidance about us to see what the boundaries of AI are going to be. And it's kind of, that's an example, but of anything in society, as things change society, we still need to allow our morals to guide us into how those changes will best serve the good of society. Now, he also says in paragraph 98 that there remains to us after again calling to judgment the economic system now in force and its most bitter accuser, socialism, and passing explicit and just sentence upon them to search out more thoroughly the root of these many orders and to point out that the first and most necessary remedy is a reform of morals. So he's saying, look, we've dogged socialism throughout these encyclicals, showed the evils of socialism. We've talked about, you know, everything that's wrong with it. But he says the answer isn't so much getting rid of socialism as it is the reform of the human heart, because what he's showing is that it's the condition of the human heart that's creating the problems we have. It's not the actual system itself that happens to be in place. So it's not a changing of systems is not the answer, but a changing of the human heart. Now, in paragraphs 100 and 101, he says that an economy should be ordered rightly. So, I mean, we do. It's not about, okay, let's keep socialism and change the human heart. But he's saying, no, any economic system that you use has to be ordered rightly. And he said, no economic system should be centered on productivity or money, but on justice and what is good for what is for the common good. But the problem raised here is that capital exists for itself without seeing labor as a partner. So now he's going to begin the shift away from socialism, because in Rerum Novarum, Pope Leo XIII put socialism under fire. But now there's a shift happening here where Pope Pius XI is going to put capitalism under fire and critique capitalism. Now, to give you a historical context, when this encyclical was released, we were 2 years into the Great Depression. So Pope Pius XI could see the outcome of unfettered capitalism and that it led to this Great Depression. I think of the, when we think of just economies, I think of the Simone Weil Catholic Worker House in Portland. Good friends of mine, I'm part of that community. And one of the things that this particular Catholic Worker House focuses on is just economy. And it's not like, you know, they're isolated, like, oh, wow, look at us, we're talking about just economy. That is very much a Dorothy Day kind of a thing. But their focus is on how in our neighborhood do we create a just economy? And how do we give preferential treatment to the poor in an economy? I won't get into details of what they're doing or how they're doing it, but yeah, give them a call and pick their brain. They have some amazing things they're doing. Now, in paragraphs 102 to 110, the rest of the section we're studying, there's a few principles that are coming out where the Pope now critiques capitalism. Now, for those of you really given to capitalism, and most Americans are, you're going to be offended, okay? But that's okay. If we're not offended, then we will never stop to correct course if that's necessary in our life. A lot of the changes I've made in my life that are for the positive in my life came because I got offended, and I got offended into reality and was awakened. By being offended, I was awakened to the truth, and because I was asleep. And a lot of us as humans, we fall asleep at the will, and we just sleepily do the same thing day in, day out without ever challenging ourselves, am I actually going the right direction? So what Pope Pius XI does is he does a favor for us, and he says, is capitalism actually a good thing or not, or are we just sleepily believing it is? So just as, again, in Rerum Novarum, the Pope brought socialism under fire, so now Pope Pius XI brings capitalism under fire for various reasons, for four reasons. He says, first, capitalism comes with vices and acts in a dictatorial way. You know, so often we think of socialism like, oh man, that's the stuff of dictators. What the Pope brings out is, no, capitalism is the same kind of dictatorship, just with different kind of dictators. So with socialism, you've got the dictators of the state. With capitalism, you've got the dictators in the corporations. But they're all dictators at the end of the day. And they come with vices. I mean, if we weren't a capitalist society, we wouldn't have Las Vegas. And Las Vegas is known as what? Sin City. For a reason. Las Vegas is gross. That place, I mean, it is gross because it is the epitome of human greed and usury and theft. And all 10 commandments are broken in Las Vegas every minute of every day. But why do we even have Vegas? It's because we have capitalism. So what the Pope is saying is Vegas is a great example of the excesses of capitalism and the vices and the dictatorship, because those casinos are dictators over the tourists that come there. The second reason why the Pope brings capitalism under fire is that it concentrates wealth into the hands of a few. Now, socialism concentrates power into the hands of a few. Capitalism concentrates wealth into the hands of a few. It never works out. There's this illusion, and it's just an illusion. It's not reality, okay? Hear me out here. It is just an illusion that everybody can thrive in a capitalist society. That never happens. There are slums all through capitalist societies. If capitalist societies, just everybody thrives, you wouldn't have the South Side of Chicago. You wouldn't have inner East LA. You wouldn't have East Portland and all these other places, Baltimore, these slums. But capitalism brings wealth to a few and poverty to the many. It always works out that way. You know, just like the people who love socialism, they're like, oh, socialism creates a society where everybody's got enough. No, socialism always creates a society where nobody has anything. And capitalism brings a society where everybody's free and everybody can thrive. No, capitalism brings mass amounts of poverty and makes everybody a slave. Okay? Slave to the corporations. Third, the Pope says that capitalism does not provide the freedom it promises. Like I just said, it does not provide the freedom it promises. Pope Pius XI brings out that there is an invisible group controlling everything in capitalism. And that's the investors. The investors control everything. So in corporations, you have people investing in corporations. So, for example, Nike has investors. People put their money into Nike. Now, here's the thing. Nike now is required by law to ensure that those investors make money. Well, what do you do in economic downturns when you can't make money for the investors? What do you do when stocks go down? All that stuff. Well, then you got to come up with corrupt ways to make money. So then Nike becomes corrupt. And they use corruption and corrupt ways and manipulation and control and shady backroom deals in order to ensure that the investors keep getting their money. So really, the leaders at Nike become slaves to the investors. And so you've got slavery. So the investors are being dictators over the leaders of Nike. And even if Nike want to do the right thing, they can't do the right thing because the investors, they're beholden to the investors, and the investors have become their dictators, demanding. So people say, well, Nike needs to get rid of child slave labor. They can't, because the investors hold too much sway over them in order for them to be able to do that. So Nike can't pay just wages because of that. Or they could, but they won't. So investors are the real problem. And the Pope brings out, and the investors are this invisible group controlling everything, and their demands are what matters, not the common good. And investors are all about money, 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 and they don't care how that money gets to them. And the fourth problem with capitalism is that unregulated capitalism is nepotism, according to the Pope. So you just end up with this greed, vice, corruption, domination, it all happens in a capitalist society. And I have to warn people in our countries, there's people in other countries like Kenya and places that are like, oh, wish it was more like America. And I tell people when I'm in Kenya, I say, you do not want Kenya becoming like America, because we have murder, we have rape everywhere, we have suicides like crazy, we have mass shootings, we have corruption everywhere. So don't try to be like America. We should not be the shining example to the world, okay? The shining example to the world should be Jesus Christ, because he's the only one that got it right. Okay. Got on a little tangent on that, but I'm trying to shake you a little bit. I'm trying to make you sweat so that you think about where you're headed in your life. Now, in paragraphs 108 and 109, which I will read and explain, but the Pope brings out more principles in this as we get to the end of this study today. He says that the accumulation of might and power generates in turn three kinds of conflict. So he's like, in capitalism, you get this accumulation of might and power, and it brings about three kinds of conflict. First, there is the struggle for economic supremacy itself. So then everything becomes engrossed and obsessed with money and economic power. Then the second conflict is the bitter fight to gain supremacy over the state in order to use in economic struggles its resources and authority. Therefore, I brought a couple minutes ago the idea of downturns in the economy. Well, how do you get those investors paid? Is that places like Nike and Tesla and you know, Facebook and all these mega corporations, they gain power over the state. So the state becomes a slave to corporations. You see, in socialism, corporations are slave to the state. And capitalism is the other way around, but it's still slavery, no matter how you look at it. And so what happens is then the corporations begin powering over the state in order to manipulate the government into giving it wealth and power. Therefore, your Chuck Schumer's, Nancy Pelosi's, Mitch McConnell's, and all these people, they're never going to change unless God does something miraculous in their heart. But they're never going to change. They're always going to bow to the corporations, because these presidents, senators, Congress people, they're all beholden to the corporations they're bought and paid for. So that's what capitalism looks like. And then finally, he says the third conflict that arises is the conflict between states themselves. Not only because countries employ their power and shape their policies to promote every economic advantage of their citizens, but also because they seek to decide political controversies that arise among nations through the use of their economic supremacy and strength. Therefore, the United Nations, okay, the United Nations is united for sure around one thing, and that is wealth and power. And so what these nations, these corporations do, then they become multinational corporations, and then they begin to dominate other governments for their own advantage. So you see, it all turns out to be this evil plot against you and I. And I'm glad that Pope Pius XI is bringing out that we need a reform of the human heart, because as Jeremiah, the ancient Jewish prophet, said, he says that the human heart is desperately wicked. Who can know the depths of how wicked the human heart is? And so we are left with this question, what do we do? How do we get justice in society? Well, you're not going to do it by reforming these multinational corporations and the government, because those people are steeped in wickedness. It's going to have to happen when God gets a hold of people. So what do? We pray and say, God, please change the heart. Because at the end of the day, inside these multinational corporations and inside the government are human beings who are our brothers and sisters, but they are our naughty brothers and sisters. And so we pray that God reforms their heart. And then in paragraph 109, if you are given to individualism, you're going to hate this paragraph. But he says the ultimate consequences of the individualist spirit in economic life are those which you yourselves, venerable brethren and beloved children, see and deplore. Free competition has destroyed itself. Economic dictatorship has supplanted the free market. Unbridled ambition for power has likewise succeeded greed for gain. All economic life has become tragically hard, inexorable, and cruel. To these are to be added the grave evils that have resulted from an intermingling and shameful confusion of the functions and duties of public authority with those of the economic sphere. In other words, there's this relationship now between the government and the corporations, such as one of the worst, the virtual degradation of the majesty of the state, which, although it ought to sit on high like a queen and supreme arbitress, free from all partiality and intent upon the common good and justice, has become a slave, surrendered and delivered to the passions and greed of men. In other words, the government should act as an impartial party to ensure the common good. But he says instead, in capitalism, the government has become a slave to the corporations and their greed. And then he says, well, you want to talk about international relations? Well, he says, and as to international relations, two different streams have issued from the one fountainhead. On the one hand, economic nationalism or even economic imperialism. And then, so that's your Trump supporters, okay? This economic imperialism is not good. But then on the other hand, in case you are not a Trump supporter, you're on the other side of the aisle. He says, a no less deadly and accursed internationalism of finance or international imperialism whose country is where profit is. In other words, there's this crossing over of borders and abusing places like China and India and other places for your own economic gain. And so it's not enough for these multinational corporations to ruin and abuse and enslave the country they're in. They spill over the borders and abuse and enslave other countries as well. I'm telling you, Pope Pius XI does not pull any punches. He is a tough warrior, and he is willing to call a spade a spade. I love it. Excited. Love this encyclical because the Pope is just being so anarchist in some ways. So he brings out that capitalism is just as unjust as socialism because capitalism becomes a cruel dictator. You end up with slavery to greed. You end up using the earth's resources to a negative effect. And there's no care for your fellow human in capitalism. There's only stress, traffic, negative competition and division. You know, when I sit in gridlock on the Portland area freeways, I think to myself, why are we doing this to ourselves? Why are we as humans allowing ourselves to be put into this trap that adds so much stress and depression? And yet we just keep doing it. We just keep on going. So to close out in paragraph 110, the Pope gives us the solutions to all of this. He says in the second part of this encyclical, so we're making a transition here, where we have presented our teaching, we have described the remedies to these great evils so explicitly that we consider it sufficient at this point to recall them briefly. So he says, it's not hopeless. Here's the solution to these problems. Since the present system of economy is founded chiefly upon ownership and labor, the principles of right reason, that is, of Christian social philosophy, must be kept in mind regarding ownership and labor and their association there. But he adds this sentence, but must be put into actual practice. So he's like, it's not enough to talk about this stuff. Got to do it. Got to put it into concrete practice. So he says, first, so as to avoid the reefs of individualism and collectivism, those are two no-nos in the Pope's mind, individualism and collectivism, to avoid those, The twofold character, that is individual and social, both of capital or ownership of work or labor, must be given due and rightful weight. In other words, give equal weight to both so they balance each other out. He says relations of one to the other must be made to conform to the laws of strictest justice, communicative justice, as it is called, with the support of Christian charity. The Catholic Church needs to get out of itself, get into society, and start making a prophetic difference. I read a book recently by a Catholic worker, and he said that the church has lost its prophetic witness. It needs to regain its prophetic voice in society. He goes on to say the Pope does free competition, kept within definite and due limits, and still more economic dictatorship must be effectively brought under public authority in these matters which pertain to the latter's function. The public institutions of themselves, of peoples, moreover, ought to make all human society conform to the common good. The corporations must be forced into working for the common good, not through socialism, but through true charity and justice. He says, if this is done, that most important division of social life, namely economic activity, cannot fall, likewise to return to the right and fail to return to the right and sound order. So great summary there, the solutions right there. Now, next time the Pope is going to break down socialism further. He's going to really pinpoint some and critique it even harder. And I think that's good, because right now a lot of people are pushing for socialism in our society, and he's just going to pick it apart and critique it and call it back under fire in a very detailed way. Well, it is fun, in my opinion. Maybe it's just my personality, but I think it is fun to say things that shock everyone out of the norm. Sometimes in my life, even at work, I'll just say things and my coworkers are like, I can't believe that just came out of your mouth. But then it gets them to thinking. I love shocking people into thinking instead of sleeping all the time. And it's fun. The norm is not always right. Mark Twain said that if you find yourself agreeing with the majority, it is time to stop and reflect. May we stop and reflect deeply and pick apart what we are doing and seek a more just economy as we create a just society right where we are.
You've been listening to Common Sense on Social Justice with your host, Michael Davis. A common sense and fresh perspective to creating justice where you are. Share your comments and questions with Michael by emailing sjcommonsense@gmail.com. That's sjcommonsense@gmail.com.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a friend. You can support this vital mission of evangelization through materdayradio.com or the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for helping us lead souls to Jesus through the Blessed Virgin Mary.